Welcome to the Terrible Podcast with your hosts from thehammerspeaks.com, David Todd, and from SteelersDepot.com, Dave Bryan. Just two Daves talking all the Steelers football you could ever want. And now, here's Dave and Dave.
Welcome to the Terrible Podcast with Dave and Dave. It's Season 2, Episode 121. And Dave, it feels like it's about 121 degrees here in Pittsburgh. We're going to go into the high 90s. I know in St. Louis, where the Pirates are this weekend, they're going to go up to maybe 108 for the game on Saturday. And that probably sounds like a nice, cool summer day to you down in your area.
You know, they say it's not the heat, it's humidity, and Lord knows we got it down here. We went through a lot of rain a couple weeks ago, but we haven't had a drop since, and it's like a sauna when you step outside. 90, I think we're going to have 100 with the heat index, 100 this weekend, so I'll be safe inside with the AC blowing.
All right. Well, let me just do a little self-promotion here right at the front of the show today. Joe Bendel, who's a good friend of mine and I think kind of the best talk show guy going in Pittsburgh, he's on 970 ESPN. He's going on vacation for the next 3 weeks. I mentioned this on Tuesday's show. I will be filling in on ESPN Pittsburgh. That's 970 AM. You can find us on the internet as well, ESPN.com. 4 to 7 for the next 3 weeks. Please join in. Feel free to call in. You can tweet me on the show. And certainly, as I mentioned, Dave will be a regular guest. We'll have him on at least 3 times during the course of those 3 weeks. Lots of stuff to talk about, things we talk about on the podcast as well. But a little PR for me there, Dave. A little football news. We got a Steeler going into the Hall of Fame. You just told me about this. I hadn't heard this, but it's kind of a fun little story. Why don't you tell the folks who might not know what's going on there?
Yeah, actually, Antonio Brown, everybody knows about that all-purpose, 1,000 yards receiving, 1,000, over 1,000 receiving yards last year and 1,000 total return yards in the same season. He, of course, was the first player in NFL history to do that.
Yeah, I think, what would he finish all-purpose yards, like 2,200 or something like that?
Yeah, I don't have that in front of me, but that sounds pretty close there. He now has his game jersey, one of his game jerseys from last season, on display in Canton, Ohio, in the Pro Football Hall of Fame. So that's a great distinction, and as everybody knows, both the AFC and NFC rookies are having their orientation this past week, I believe, in Cleveland,
for sure.
In Cleveland, yeah, or close to there, because they wanted to make touring the Pro Football Hall of Fame part of that experience so players could see their past. And I think that's a great idea for them to do that because, let's face it, those kids don't like to go there and be lectured by Pac-Man Jones and Terrell Owens and all like that. I know half those guys probably fall asleep in there, but I'm willing to bet they don't fall asleep in the Pro Football Hall of Fame. And a lot of those kids, probably it has to be their first time going there. And to get a sense of what the history of the league is, hopefully it hits home, with about 20% of them to let them know, their tradition of the league and the things that they're expected to live up to. So that's good, and it's good for Antonio. Hopefully that's not the last time we see something of his in the Pro Football Hall of Fame, down the line, that's for sure.
Dave, have you been to the Pro Football Hall of Fame?
You know what? I never have, and that's something.
And I haven't either, and a good friend of mine was just there 2 weeks ago, and surprisingly enough, unimpressed. They were, it's a small building. We've all seen the picture of the building, which is not all that impressive. Obviously, it's an older building. But they were unimpressed with the layout as a whole. And I'd love to hear from our listeners who've been there. If they want to email us
TheTerriblePodcast@gmail.com.
TheTerriblePodcast@gmail.com. You can hit us on Twitter or whatever. What the people who've gone to the Pro Football Hall of Fame think of it, And, it, you know, is it impressive? Is it something that's worth doing? Because, you know, it's not too far away from me, and I've always, you know, thought about going, and I've never been as well. So anybody out there who's got an opinion on that, let us know, because we'd like to hear. But Antonio Brown, Dave, I don't know. You know, we talk about things in football and records, and it's not something that people pay that much attention to. We, you know, if you asked who the passing leader is, probably people can tell you in passing yards who it is, but I'm sure they can't tell you the yardage. I'm sure they, catches, everybody knows it's Jerry Rice. Nobody knows how many catches he has. And you go, we have some consecutive game streaks. But, you know, this, it's nice that Antonio Brown's got the all-purpose yardage record, and I'm looking at it here, 22-11. It's a relatively easy number to remember now. But does that number surprise you? Does the number itself, 22-11, as a all-purpose yardage number surprise you? I kind of thought it would be a couple hundred yards higher.
You know what? I think it's because he's the first player in NFL history to have over 1,000 of each. So maybe it's the total return yards that's the hard one there,
right,
to go along with. Because, I mean, let's face it, the over 1,000 receiving yards, that's not the big deal there.
So he had 325 in punts. He had 737 in kick returns, and so that gives you just over 1,000 there. So it's actually 1,062, and then he had 1,108 receiving. If I did my math right here, that doesn't actually sound exactly right. But anyway, maybe he had some. Oh, he did. He had 41 rushing yards. So there you go. You're right about the return yards over 1,000. Clearly, that's it. He only had 27 kick returns, though. So if you think a guy is a normal returner for a team at 16 games, and in the old days, you know, with fewer touchbacks and stuff, and a guy's getting to return, you know, at least three kickoffs a game probably, at 16 times three, that's about 50. And if you get 20 yards of return, that's 1,000 right there. So I'm just a little surprised that there wasn't a receiver who was returning kicks and punts who had done that prior.
You know what, though? You probably only get one season to try to do it, though, because if you're that good of a receiver, and we're going to see this this upcoming year with the Steelers, is he's so valuable as a receiver that you don't want to have him out there on special teams taking unnecessary hits. So that's probably half of this of why it's probably such a feat, because let's face it, he's not going to return. You know, of course, anything can change, but Emmanuel Sanders is set to return both kicks and punts this year, and we could possibly see Chris Rainey as well. We'll have to see how that shakes out, but I think a lot of that has to do with them not wanting him out there taking extra hits. They want him, he's more important to them as a wide receiver.
Yeah, how great would it be if Emmanuel Sanders goes out and breaks his record this year?
Oh, Lord, that would be a great problem to have, would it not?
Yeah.
That means he played in all 16 games, too.
that's for one. There's your starter. I mean, and you got to think about, Antonio Brown put up those numbers. And, as we talked about Mike Wallace's first half and Antonio Brown's second half, you put those two halves together. I don't know exactly what they were, but I know Wallace finished with, 320 some or something in his last eight games. And he finished over 1,100, I think. And Antonio Brown probably had 300 in his first. So, we're talking 1,700 yards if you took Mike Wallace's first half and Antonio Brown's second half. I don't know what the single season record is, but that's probably pretty damn close.
And we've talked about this. This receiving unit,
best unit in football.
If they stay healthy, sure.
And I'm not talking best receiving unit. I'm talking best positional unit in football, maybe.
And deepest, yeah, without a doubt. Because you got Jericho Cotchery running as your once Mike Wallace gets in here, Jericho Cotchery running as your fourth wide receiver.
We both love. I mean, you and I both love Sanders and Cotchery, and they're playing behind two Pro Bowlers.
Absolutely, and I think Sanders can be the guy that they need him to be. It's just all about him staying on the field and healthy. So, I'm with you. I mean, there's no reason not to be excited. And then when you think about maybe what Tony Clemens possibly can become down the line, if he makes the 53-man roster, if you can keep this group together for a couple of years here, which is possible because Cotchery's under contract, signed a 2-year deal, You know, it's very possible you can have all five of these guys together next year as well, too. So, yeah, best receiving group and deepest in the National Football League, I think, right now.
Yeah, pretty great stuff. So, Dave, Steeler news, obviously, we're going to be light for the next 3 weeks until the Steelers open camp on July 25th, which is now, less than a month away. But, we're playing on the fringes of the roster. And we were talking about this. This was a great analogy somebody used for the Pirates. This isn't shuffling deck chairs on the Titanic. This is moving the ashtrays on the table next to the deck chairs on the Titanic. But a little fringe stuff. We talked about Troy Smith getting waived, and there's a position spot open because of that, which is still open. But the Steelers made a move at linebacker, a local kid from Aliquippa. They waived because of a shoulder injury, and then they signed a guy. Why don't you take us through the details of that?
Yeah, and in fact, the Brandon Lindsey, the kid out of Pitt, I thought there might be a great shot for this kid to make the practice squad. And it was a bit of a shocker when the news came out that he was released. So there had to be something to it. The day, of course, started off yesterday with it being announced that the Steelers were working out Ryan Baker, a former linebacker out of LSU, and Markell Carter, who was a former New England Patriot and out of Central Arkansas, I believe. And that's the way the day started. The news then came out after that they had decided to sign Baker. And then, which was, all the math was adding up because they had the roster spot following the release of Troy Smith Monday, I believe. So, everything's going along fine, and we get the bomb dropped on us yesterday afternoon that Brandon Lindsey was released, and it kind of was a shocker. I did a little initial digging there, found out it was a shoulder injury that Lindsey, I guess, probably suffered during minicamp would be my best guess. Lindsey, of course, followed up on Twitter last night to say that he is going to have shoulder surgery on that. Now, he was waived injured, so I think the speculation is they went ahead and did an injury settlement on him, but I'm not. We'll have to see what eventually shakes out on that. If he clears waivers, which he should,
well, 100%, he's clearing waivers.
Yeah, he could revert back instead of the Steelers having an injury settlement with him. They could just stash him on IR for the season, or at least until he is 100% healthy, and then release him from the injured reserve list. So we'll have to see how that shakes out. Baker, kind of a guy, don't know too terribly much about him, 5'11", originally signed as a free agent by the Buccaneers after the draft. He didn't last with them long. He started 2 years at linebacker for LSU, finished his career with 184 tackles, 15 and a half tackles for a loss and 9.5 sacks. Reportedly ran a 4.74 at the combine back in February. Did 30 reps on the bench, and many of the scouts pegged him as an inside linebacker. But he's probably, being he played some weak side too. This is a guy that could probably go either way. But the Steelers had recently signed Brandon Johnson, the cast off the free agent from the Cincinnati Bengals, right there as minicamp closed up. And even though Brandon Johnson mostly, you thought would play inside, it appears they're going to try to work him in outside, even though he admits he has no pass rush experience really to speak of. He's going to have to probably gain a little bit of weight. He has some size to him. But, they could probably be thinking about maybe a right outside linebacker type position possibly for Baker as well, too. But let's face it, this kid's a fringe kid. He's a camp body, and I believe you want to kind of talk more about the linebacker position in depth.
We're going to get into camp battles and that kind of stuff. A lot of stuff going on in July. Obviously, we have time for that. We'll talk about bubble spots, and certainly that's kind of the stuff there. But you put a post up about Morty Ivey, and I got to tell you, he's a guy who, when we were talking about this stuff and we'd played a couple preseason games last year, he is a guy who I really thought might be a guy on the 53-man. I thought he was going to be maybe that last guy as a special teams guy. He had a couple games there, obviously late in games when you're, you know, teams are running their, you know, their third and fourth units out there. Guys are just getting some time, getting the reps at the end of games, kind of fodder time, basically. Morty Ivey looked really good. He's an undersized guy, plays inside. It didn't happen, but he was on the fringes of the practice squad for a while. And did he actually get signed for any period of time?
Yeah, they pulled him up for a game or two when Farrier, Harrison, and Worlds was down against the New England Patriots. I think he played one snap in that game. Contributed on special teams against the Ravens. Had to get released for a little bit there, then signed back to the practice squad.
And we, you know, it's one of the interesting things. We've seen the Steelers do that with guys a lot. It happened with Steve McClendon. It happened with Sonny Harris back in the day, I think, a few times. We see, you know, it's happened with some of the offensive linemen. The Steelers have to do that. They'll release a guy Saturday morning and then sign him back up on Monday.
Yeah, and the last time he was released, though, he kind of stayed unsigned for a couple of weeks there, and then they signed him back to the 53-man roster. When was it? I think it was I've got it in here somewhere, but late in the season. But he ended the season, I think, dressing for like the last three or four games of the season for the Steelers. Now, of course, he didn't get to play hardly any snaps on defense at all. And, I think he only played the one snap against the Patriots, I think I found in my research earlier in the season. Mostly a special teams guy with two tackles. He makes for an interesting case right now because, you know, there's the questions surrounding Stevenson Sylvester. And you know, I'm not ready to say Stevenson Sylvester's a lock to make the 53-man roster. I think he's got as good a shot as anybody. I mean, he's definitely, to me right now, would be the number two behind Larry Foote as we enter the training camp and all like
yeah,
that.
Yeah, absolutely, absolutely.
There's no reason to think right now that he's not going to make the roster. But Morty Ivey, as you said, pushed last year. And Morty Ivey's out, I believe, out of practice squad eligibility now because he has spent time with the Carolina Panthers, with the Miami Dolphins, with the St. Louis Rams, and, of course, the Pittsburgh Steelers last year on their practice squad. And I think he has used up his practice squad eligibility. So this is a do-or-die time for him. And you know, who knows how much he suffered last offseason because of the lockout, of course, and everything that went along with that, missing prep time. He's had this whole offseason now. So and talking about linebackers, David, you know, I like to throw this out there. I'm not saying it's going to happen, but there's a slim chance that both James Harrison and Jason Worlds could start training camp on the active PUP list. Stevenson Sylvester, I think, was banged up a little bit during the final mini camp and missed maybe a few practices in there. You've got Sean Spence as a rookie. I guess what I'm trying to say there is there might be, depending on how many roster spots they decide to keep at linebacker this year, there might be an opportunity for him to sneak a spot in there. So this is definitely a do or die. If he does not make the 53-man roster, his NFL dream might be over, you know?
Yeah, you know, interesting guy, you know, as we said, a motor guy, a special teams guy. He's never going to, you know, he's a homeless man's Patrick Willis. He's never going to be a guy who's going to be, you hope, who's going to be your starting inside linebacker. But, you know, I kind of took a shine to him last year, like to see him do well. But, yeah, like you said, look, it'll be interesting to see if and when and how many guys the Steelers put on the PUP when they open practice. Obviously, we know Rashard Mendenhall and Casey Hampton are going to open training camp on the PUP. And it'll be interesting, as you said, to see if they put anybody else there and then if they go out and look to get more bodies. I mean, training camp has functioned just fine over the years with, you know, fewer than 80 bodies, and they've now gone to 90. So I don't know that going to camp with, you know, 87 or 86 guys who are ready to go is really going to be a detriment to kind of having enough guys out there to practice.
Yeah. The only
they're going to hit so few times now.
Yeah, and the only thing, like I said, and this is why I think there might be an outside chance still another linebacker gets signed to that 90th roster spot that's open right now, is just from the sheer fact that if James Harrison Worlds, and maybe another linebacker shows up kind of dinged up to start camp on the PUP list. They just need some bodies in there. That's definitely what I think that you see with the signing yesterday of Baker there. And let's be clear about PUP. I think that scares people quite a bit. When training camp opens, if you are a slightly dinged and are going to miss practice time whatsoever, you better put that player on the active PUP list to start things off, because if you don't put him on active PUP to start preseason, and once he starts practicing, he is not eligible for the reserve PUP once the season starts. So that means that if a guy starts the training camp and he's not on PUP, he suffers some sort of injury, you cannot throw him on the reserve PUP to start the season. He has to either go to IR, or be released. So I think a lot of people are unclear about that. That's why sometimes you'll see some kind of questionable names. Last year we saw it with Chris Kimoato, with Hines Ward, I think, a few other guys at the start of camp there. It wasn't that their injury was so bad. It was just that they weren't practicing yet, and it's more of a fallback should they need to place that player on reserve PUP once a season starts. So if a player, just remember this, if a player is not on PUP to start training camp, he is not eligible for PUP once the season starts.
Right. And, you know, we've talked about some of the fringe guys on the outside as well, Dave. You know, there are guys we like, there are guys we like less. But, you know, we talk about, is it a make or break year for guys? And I know one of your writers wrote that about Ziggy Hood, and we've talked extensively about Ziggy. But, you know, for, you know, Chris Carter, he didn't get on the field much last year. We have some expectations for him. You know, it's always a make or break year for guys. I mean, the NFL is a tough business, and you can perform until you can't perform. And it doesn't matter if you're Hines Ward, Chad Ochocinco, or Morty Ivey, or Ziggy Hood. You know, you have a bad year and your career is in jeopardy. But guys, certainly guys who you have expectations for, like Jason Worlds, and at some level, Chris Carter. This is a big season for them, and they've got to both stay healthy. And, you know, they could both stay healthy and not get on the field. But if they both stay healthy, play well in the preseason, and look like they're going to be able to contribute in the future, that's going to make the decisions that the Steelers have to make with guys like James Harrison that we've talked about a couple times more interesting, and maybe make the Steelers more comfortable with, you know, if you were to release a guy like James Harrison and save $13 million that you can use in other places, you know, you got to have comfort that Jason Worlds or Chris Carter can step in and do that job.
Yeah, most definitely, because we talked about next year with Harrison, there's the opportunity to save, I think, $8 million in cap space next year with Harrison. I know people don't like to hear this about Harrison, and I'm kind of getting the same kind of thing with him that I had with Emmanuel Sanders last year, David, is I'm so worried that James Harrison's not going to be able to play 16 games this year. Whether it be for a knee, whether it be for the back or whatnot. I hope at the end of the season I'm able to write that I was 100% wrong on this. But this is where Jason Worlds is really, I think, going to be needed. Lamar Woodley's young, healthy. That hamstring injury, though it's not like a hamstring injury, is chronic. Once you get that thing healed, it should be good to go, and he should be fine on the left side. Where Jason Worlds, I think, is going to be needed the most, and it's going to be interesting to see where he lines up when he gets into the game on these preseason games, you know, is likely at right outside linebacker. Chris Carter, you mentioned, yes. I mean, this is a guy that we just don't know too much about, be honest with you, because the little time that he got last year due to all the injuries, he looked lost, and that's not unexpected. A kid, you know, fifth-round draft pick that saw no off-season time due to the lockout and all like that. I think there is high expectations, or at least him able to not have his head swimming so much this year. Stevenson Sylvester, as we mentioned, and the coaching staff as well, too, that this is the year for Stevenson Sylvester to – this guy ought to stick out head and shoulders in preseason, if you ask me. I mean, this is a guy that when he's in a game during preseason ought to stick out. I mean, really, he ought to dominate the competition – and it ought to be visible on tape. So there are some questions with the linebackers this year, and I do think a lot of it, revolves around Jason World, because he's going to be the next man up on either side as a replacement to James Harrison or Lamar Woodley.
Yep. And just if you were going to be, if you were a betting man and you were going to, let's obviously we know who the outside guys are going to be if they're healthy. And we know who three of the guys are going to be if they're healthy. Do you think there will be a position battle between Larry Foote and Stevenson Sylvester? Will he have to just be overwhelmingly good and maybe Foote a step slow? Or do you think it's almost guaranteed day one that Larry Foote's going to be the guy in the middle? Because I kind of think almost guaranteed day one, Larry Foote's going to, you know, when we open in Denver, he's going to be the guy inside.
I'm with you. I'm with you 100% on that. I mean, Kevin Colbert, I think, you know, when he talked about Sylvester a few weeks ago on Sirius, you know, he mentioned Larry Foote and then was asked about Stevenson Sylvester, and he was like, oh, yeah, well, he's going to battle too, kind of trying to keep the interview positive and all like that. But kind of the sense that I got out of, kind of reading in between the lines with Colbert was, hey, this is Larry Foote. This is a guy that's been in our system. He knows what the hell's going on. He's a leader. He knows the defense inside. Now, he's going to be the guy until he's not. So I don't think Sylvester's going to battle him at all for that position. Now, I think there were some reports, you know, during the mini camps of the OTAs that Timmons was calling some defense as well, too. So,
yep.
Like I said, Sylvester, during these preseason, this is a huge preseason for him, because just as easy as he could make the 53-man roster this year, I think it's just as easy as he could find himself being released as well, too, during the final cutdown. So I would.
Who is that?
Stevenson Sylvester.
Okay. Well, that's an interesting comment.
I mean, Sylvester Stevenson. I always get that.
Stevenson Sylvester.
Oh, okay.
You had it right, yeah.
Just like me, two first names, Dave Bryan, you know. Yeah, Stevenson Sylvester, and I've only had three cups of coffee this morning. But Sylvester, I definitely think I'm not going to say he's on the bubble, David. I think he's got to be beat out by somebody like a Morty Ivey, let's face it, he's in the final year of his – I think Stevenson Sylvester will be a restricted free agent after this year. So, there's not much lost in cutting him loose this year contract-wise with the remaining proration that's left on his rookie contract, which is piddling at this point. So, yep. I wouldn't call him a lock. I mean, I think he's definitely the guy right now behind Foote, but I think he can be beat out.
Okay, that's interesting stuff. And one of the things you talked about there is we talked about Foote being beaten out. And, you know, if we look back in hindsight at the Steelers season, I mean, there was some writing on the wall there. All of a sudden, James Ferrier is getting pulled from games. I mean, you know, you said it just right. He's the man until he's not the man. And the Steelers obviously saw something as the season went along that James Ferrier wasn't getting it done. And I remember one particular play around the goal line where he didn't step up into the hole and stop a guy. And I can't remember exactly which game it was, but, these things happen, and guys, you know, you grade out in tape a couple of games and you don't play well. And this certainly, you know, as well as anybody seeing this on the offensive line, you see this stuff happen, and all of a sudden when Ferrier's getting pulled from games, well, the initial reaction as a fan is, he must be injured, so Foote's in there taking plays. But, we saw this happen over the course of the season, and lo and behold, at the end of the season, there's no more James Ferrier because his level of play slipped. And, you know, Larry Foote's an older guy, and, you know, we'll see what happens with that. But as you said, Sylvester's got to step up and essentially take that job. We don't want to see Larry Foote's level of play slip. But, you know, hopefully if that were to happen, or if Sylvester's play, steps up to the point where he takes the job, then so be it. And, you know, changing the guard. People have talked last year about the Steelers being old. They've talked this offseason wrongly, incorrectly, about the Steelers losing a lot in terms of what they've got on the field. We all agree that there is a leadership, there is some leadership lost when guys like Kiesel and Hines Ward, et cetera, aren't in the locker room and Ferrier. But what they lost on the field toward the last eight games of the season was de minimis. It was minimal loss on the field.
The linebacker position, especially inside, boy, what I mean, when you look back at it now, I mean, it was just a mess because of Timmons having to play out of position. You had Foote playing beside Ferrier at times, and then, as you said, at certain times you had Ferrier coming off in favor of Foote. That's almost, you know, the continuity, keeping those two guys inside together in a 3-4 playing more together. It's kind of like the right hand knowing what the left hand's going to do, I think. And when you mess up that continuity like that, even though you have assignments, you know, in certain situations, and everybody, the next guy should be able to step up regardless of who's in there. I think there's a lot to be said about continuity when you have the same two guys playing inside beside each other there, especially in a Dick LeBeau run defense. But there was, you know, and there was quite a bit of that last year, especially, as you said, when Ferrier's coming out. And at times I thought, well, what is he? Just, is he hurt? And then Foote's coming in for 9 or 10 plays, and then Ferrier, they were alternating some series. Now, it's obvious because I think they wanted to try to get the most they could out of Ferrier's tank and not leave him in there for 60 plays a game. But, you know, I think Foote can handle this job. And, of course, it's going to be Foote is in a contract year this year. So, you know, this is likely going to be it for him. And where,
yes,
they,
yes,
where they move forward from that next year with Spence or what have you, or Timmons shifting over to the Buck, we'll just have to see. But, you know, if there's one group that I would say on defense that the most question marks are surrounding this year, some people want to talk about cornerback, and you can make a good argument with the youth on the cornerback, but I'm not so much worried about the cornerback situation this year as I am more about the linebacker situation with the Steelers, A, from an injury standpoint with Harrison, and B, with kind of the play that's going to go on inside.
Yeah, well stated. You know, we've talked a lot about being interested to watch individual guys and battles. And, you know, they may happen at defensive end and with some of the young guys and how the playing time split up and certainly at the other corner position. But, yes, in terms of how this defense is supposed to function and what's going to drive it, you know, that first, as you said, health is the first key. And then, you know, how are the guys behind the guys? How are they going to perform? Because it doesn't look, you know, candidly, it doesn't, you know, we all thought Dont'a Hightower might be the Steelers' first-round pick, and that would add depth to the position, which is the key to the, you know, it is essentially the key to the Steelers' defense. It's built around those guys, and Dont'a Hightower would have been a guy they added. And so it now, you know, if you're going to talk about depth, it's really not there for the Steelers unless some of these young guys take a step forward. And it will be when we get into next year's draft, that will again be kind of the focal point of what we're talking about.
Yeah, and it all depends on what they have going with Sean Spence. I mean, the guy has been incredible in football in shorts, and you know, we'll have to see where they eventually land him. I mean, basically, you know, they're calling him a Mac right now. And, you know, with the dynamics of the game changing, we've talked about with the tight ends in the league and needing a guy that can cover more and a good first step. You know, maybe he gets playing time quicker than what we think this year. I mean, the kid evidently picking up the defense good. He will definitely be a guy that I'm so excited to see in preseason, of where he lines up, how he plays, his understanding and all like that. You know, we talked about Kendrell Bell a few weeks ago. Could this guy be a guy that is just impossible to keep out of the starting lineup? You know, I wouldn't say Sylvester is the guy that can mostly challenge Foote. Maybe it's Sean Spence that you just can't keep him off the field through four games in preseason. Now, is that likely? Probably. You know, the odds would say it's against him. But you know, he is a guy for sure. Everybody's going to be watching once preseason starts.
Yep, and that would be a good problem to have.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, we all remember what Kendrell Bell did, you know, his rookie season, and I'm not saying it's going to happen, but, you know, they like this kid for a reason. He sure has been getting a lot of talk during the OTAs and the minicamps.
Dave, around the league, not obviously this is the quiet time, the NFL announced that they're going to change the kickoff times for the late games now to 4:25 from 4:15. They started a few of them in they used to do it at 4:00, then they moved to 4:05 and 4:15, which always seemed odd to me. I don't know what the 4:05 point was, except I guess get a couple more commercials in at the top of the hour. It now sounds like they're going to start all the games at 4:25, which again seems a little bit odd. Why not start them at 4:30? But you know, nobody's got a problem with this. This actually makes life a little bit easier when the occasional game runs really late or goes to overtime. So you know, that's all a good thing. Just a logistical thing, and maybe it just makes it a degree colder at Heinz Field as the sun goes down for the 4 o'clock games. But interesting piece of news. Anything to add on that?
I guess it's more tailgating time too, huh?
Yeah.
I think it'll affect five Steelers games will be impacted with that. So the Jets game, the Raiders game at the Raiders, at the Giants, at the Ravens, and at the Cowboys. So those are your games, all away games. Or let's see, the Jets game is that at home?
That's a home game week two, yep.
Okay, so that game and then four away games are the games.
So the home opener, they'll get people to get 10 more minutes of tailgate time.
There you go. Throw another.
In September, so that might be, you know, that could be, you know, 55 degrees, you know, that could be a good time.
Absolutely. So, I'm
going to have to go. I'm going to have to get down there early with some of my nephews and put 20,000 flyers on people's cars for the terrible podcast.
There we go. You're hired. you got a beef. You got a couple beefs you want to talk about, don't you?
Yeah, I got a couple guys I think are you know.
We you know what? We need to start calling this part of the show the David Todd soapbox. So
yeah,
let me pull it out and step up on it.
It's you know, this is a quarterback thing. Today we're going to focus on ex quarterbacks or you know, quarterbacks, and the first one is Drew Brees. He was on Letterman last night. Man, I'm tired of hearing about Bounty Gate. I'm sure everybody's tired of hearing about Bounty Gate, but I'm even more tired about Drew Brees thinking this didn't happen and saying the league is out to slander the Saints. Slander these guys' reputations. Look, I'm willing to at least start the conversation about did it happen or didn't it happen. But the idea that the league is out to slander guys, let's stop with that crap. They're not out to slander James Harrison, and they're not out to slander Jonathan Vilma. They're just the goal of the league is not to slander their star players. Now, do I think Bounty Gate happened? I sure as hell think it happened, and I don't understand where Drew Brees is going along with all the kind of stuff that the general public's heard, let alone that the NFL had got their, you know, got and then hired their best lawyers before they went forward with any of this. I mean, it's hard for me to believe that, you know, there is innocence. Thou doth protest a lot with Vilma and these guys, but I'm a little tired of hearing it from Drew Brees. How about you?
Yeah, I can see why, kind of a PR, kind of the guy that always, has represented the city, very, very well since he arrived in New Orleans. I don't think I have as, you know, to say it didn't happen or to pretend like it didn't happen. I think that's, you know, and I think that's part of your beef there.
Yeah.
I'm with you on that. To what degree that this happened, and hey, Hines Ward even said earlier or last week, I think it was, in an interview up in Charlotte there, that he is convinced that bounties go on throughout the league. And
yep.
And I've said all along that it would not surprise me if this happens to some degree in every locker room, you know, whether you're betting an ice cold beer or
or
a ham. You know, it's happening to some degree, even dating back to Suggs and the Rashard Mendenhall and the Hines Ward bounties there that the league did nothing about. So I guess I'm not as, I mean, how do you think he should have handled it on Letterman?
I just think it's, you know, I don't know why he needs to, there's such a PR campaign right now for him. He's been on ESPN a lot. He's been on Letterman. I mean, what's he going to go? He's you know, they're $2 million in contract, and it seems to me everybody in the world's on Drew Brees' side as opposed to the Saints when they're offering him, you know, $19.5 million and he wants $21 million. I mean, it's hard for me to get too bent out of shape about this. You know, he's their leader. He's their quarterback. He's done great things for New Orleans. I understand. And $19 million is a lot of money. Maybe he's worth $21 million. I don't know. But it's not something – it just seems to me he's out there kind of – And I think Drew Brees is a great guy and a great quarterback. So let me also
and
throw that
and a great person
out.
Too. Definitely. So, this guy, I've met this guy before with the work he done after Katrina.
I loved him at Purdue. I mean, I got only good things to say about Drew Brees. I just don't know why this needs to be dragged through the media at the extent it does. But hey, you know, whatever. It's my little beef. The next guy is Jim Kelly, and this isn't really as much of a beef as Jim Kelly was. I don't know what he was on. He was on something in the past couple of days saying he doesn't know what the Jets are doing, bringing in Tebow. He said now Sanchez is going to be looking over his shoulder every play or every game. He has a bad game. You know, Jets fans are notorious for, you know, booing when things go wrong. What fans aren't notorious for booing when things go wrong? And he said, you know, it puts undue pressure on him. Are you kidding me, man? You're the quarterback of the New York Jets. You've got a hell of a lot of pressure on you already. If the issue is that they're bringing in a competent backup as opposed to having the 40-year-old lefty who was backing him up,
Brunell.
Mark Brunell, as opposed to having Mark Brunell, that you got a guy who, you know, maybe isn't a lot better than Mark Brunell, but who has at least some body of work and has some charisma and has some media, a high media profile. That's going to affect how you go about your job and what's going on. As we've said before, if that's what's driving Sanchez's performance, they got bigger problems.
Yeah, and hello, were the New York media not going to be any harder on him just because Tim Tebow wasn't there? I mean... Did I like the move of Tebow being added there? No, not really. I still don't understand it. I mean, yeah, I'm still bitter that Tebow beat us in the playoffs and all like that, but the guy is what he is as a quarterback, in my opinion. To me, he shouldn't be a threat. If Mark Sanchez views Tim Tebow as a threat to him, as you said, that there's a bigger problem there.
Right.
You know?
Right. Just go play. Just go play well.
Just shut up and go play. What the hell is Jim Kelly back? I saw, I think it was on NFL Total Access last night, they had him on talking about something and all like that.
That probably is what it was.
You know, there's one last beat, too. And
by the way, Jim Kelly, another good guy.
Oh, yeah, another great guy.
Pittsburgh guy, you know, good guy, all that stuff. Okay.
Brett Favre, what the hell? They, four segments on NFL Total Access with Brett Favre and what he thinks about quarterbacks. I mean, that was three segments too many for me.
I missed that.
I don't know. You can. I'm sure they got the videos up on NFL.com.
Apparently, I don't need to see it.
Just go take a look at it. He looks like I don't know if it's my high definition TV or not, but he looks mighty bloated and mighty pink. So he looks like he'd been drinking and been out in the sun all day, which knowing him is not out of the question on both of those. But I don't need that. I barely paid attention to what he said, but four segments on NFL Network of him and them teasing the clips where he basically said nothing in each of them, that kind of turned my stomach as well.
And then my last one's Donovan McNabb. Donovan McNabb, he's out there. He's been in the media a couple times now this summer. His latest is he's talking about which clubs he's interested in. You know, he's as if he's choosing between a couple teams, which one he wants to go to. I don't have anything against Donovan McNabb, but it's July, and you're not on a 90-man roster. If you think you're making a 53-man roster, boy, you better hope a lot of guys get their head ripped off in the preseason, because it's not happening. I mean, he had a great career. I don't know that it's a Hall of Fame career, but it's a pretty damn good career. But and I'm not telling anybody they should turn the light off. You know, you stick it out till it doesn't work for you. And there's nothing wrong with thinking that it's going to happen for you. But I just think there's a little cold water that is going to be splashed on his face here this coming fall.
Let me ask you this. God forbid Byron Leftwich gets injured again at some point during the season, preseason, regular season, doesn't matter. That leaves you with Charlie Batch then.
And Jared Johnson.
Huh? Jared Johnson on the practice squad. do you consider McNabb?
No.
I mean, let's face it, there's not starting quarterbacks just laying around out there, you know.
No. If Leftwich and Roethlisberger go down, you know, we're going to have a different kind of podcast. You
know? the Tyler Palko podcast or what?
Yeah.
Listen, there's been a lot of talk. I think some guy on Twitter started that when Troy Smith was cut, that the Steelers were going to sign Tyler Palko. And somehow that thing grew legs. Now, I'm not saying that down the line Tyler Palko might not be a Pittsburgh, be a Pittsburgh Steeler, but that ain't happening anytime soon, if you ask me. I mean, regardless of his relationship with Todd Haley there.
Yeah, exactly.
It's something to think about. I mean, God forbid. Yeah, I mean, let's face it. If Ben Roethlisberger goes down, we're going to be talking about 2013 a little earlier than normal.
Right. I mean, not that Leftwich can't do some good things, but I mean, look, the Steelers clearly ride the shoulders of big number seven. So, you know, it's one of the things the way the league is, and everybody knows it. It's
quarterback driven league.
It sounds cliche to say it all the time, but it's true. And big number seven better stay healthy, and they got a couple linemen to try to make sure that happens.
Absolutely. Speaking of linemen, I attempted to go through some games last night on Mike Adams. I'll probably be writing more in depth of that over the next week and all like that, trying to go through all of this college games from last year. And, we'll kind of update, see if the taste in my mouth has changed any on him.
All right. Great stuff. Well, a good Friday morning, and a to all our listeners, as always, a great weekend. We have fun doing this stuff. Thanks for listening. As we've told you, we're taking donations if you're so inclined. There's a button on Dave's site at SteelersDepot.com that you can click, or you can do it through PayPal, and that would be to admin at Steelers Depot, right, Dave?
Admin at SteelersDepot.com. If you just want to open up PayPal and send one that way, that's fine too. We continue to get these things, and David's answering all these emails to you as well too. We appreciate that. It means a lot to us. We enjoy what we do. By no means are we, we're not. We don't require that. It's just something, if you feel like you want to give back, we appreciate it. And also, if you want to follow me on Twitter at Steelers Depot, if you want to follow David at Hammer Speaks, David's Pirates account, if you're a Buccos fan, is at DT on Pirates. Follow the show at Terrible Podcast. There's a number of ways to listen to the show on iTunes, via the TuneIn Radio app, which Alan Gifford, one of my longtime listeners, and does some work for me. He just got the TuneIn Radio app yesterday, so is listening to the podcast at times that way. So many ways to get in touch with us. Email the show, theterriblepodcast. At gmail.com as well too, and hey, I can't wait. I posted on Twitter last night, David, man, end of July can't get here soon enough for me right now, because we're right in the middle of this dead time. Basketball's over with. I'm not a huge basketball fan. Thank God we have the Buccos, and they're contending right now. Gives me something to watch, but outside of that, sports right now is pretty much dead.
Yeah, it's quiet time. We'll have NFL and NBA free agency, and the NBA draft finished last night. And yeah, we got some quiet time. So that means I need a lot of listeners and a lot of callers when I start doing my show on Monday. So make sure you follow that you're near a radio or near a computer, and you can hear me on 970 ESPN AM in Pittsburgh. And we'll get into all of that. We'll have plenty of Steelers talk. So thanks for listening. And as always, thanks for listening to the Terrible Podcast with Dave and Dave.